This is The God Show, a conversation about the human spirit with your host, Pat McMahon.
I hope you're having a terrific holiday season, wherever it is that you are. I'm looking forward to having a terrific God Show because one of my favorite guests of all time has made a return appearance, Dr. Duffy McMahon. She is a specialist in stress, anger, anxiety. She's a student of world religions, and she's my wife. Not necessarily in that order.
No, I started studying religions long before I met you.
And you still decided to say yes anyway.
Yeah, it was my contribution. It was my, what is it? How to bind my way into heaven.
This is going to go well.
Yeah.
Talk about your religious background, because the title of today's show really is the question, is religion necessary? And I think only if you have had some experience practicing a religion or two or seven, can you really answer that with any experience. What about your background?
Well, my background is that I was born and baptized Catholic and was kicked out of catechism when I was seven.
Why?
Well, because the Catholic Church and, you know, actually religions in general and the government are very much alike. They don't want you to ask any questions, and they don't want to have to make up anything. So if you don't go by their tenets, if you say, have any question about what about this, which is why I got kicked out of catechism. I had a friend, I was in service. I wasn't in the service, my father was. And I had a Jewish friend, and I went to a temple with her. I mean, I was only 7 years old.
Oh.
And this is before Vatican II. And when I went to catechism, I told the nun that, and she, let's just say she didn't take it well. And literally yelled and screamed at me. And as I have this tendency to do, I exacerbated the problem by asking questions.
But in those days in the church, as you said before Vatican II, it was considered nearly sinful, certainly scandalous, that a Catholic would be seen participating in somebody else's religious service.
Well, that was my problem. I asked why we were right and they were wrong, because
Ooh.
We talk about religions and so forth,
oh.
and we're supposedly a Christian society, so Judeo-Christian. Well, which Christian and which Judeo? I mean, literally, because there are, as of, I think, the last time I looked up, which was a couple months ago, there was well over 4,000 different varieties of Christianity out there. And there
not
was,
even counting the Eastern faiths. And
no,
so
no,
on.
This is Christianity alone, only over 4,000, which reminds me of The Life of Brian, the movie, which we both loved. It's whoever, you know, Brian's running away and he loses his sandal, and all of a sudden we become the sect of the sandal or the congregation of the gourd, and then they fight each other.
And Brian had this this crowd with him at all times, a Monty Python movie. That I also think is one of the most spiritual motion pictures ever made. But Brian, the reason why he continued to have to explain to the multitudes that he was not the promised Messiah is because he was in
the manger next door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you listen to them, but you talk to, you know, I was 7 years old when I was kicked out of catechism. And whenever you're trying to explain to a seven-year-old who had some, I mean, I understood aspects of what I was being told. I just didn't understand why I asked the nun if I was raised in the military. I asked the nun, if something were to happen to my friend's father, would he not go to heaven? And she said, only if he converted. And I said, well, why should he have to convert to go to heaven?
And and then you were in trouble. Right?
Yeah.
But
she finally got, yeah.
Pursue that thought, mm-hmm. that you started with, and that is the parallel between religion or some religions and government. What did you mean?
Well, most religions, if you look at the history of the Catholic Church, it's no different than, in a way, a government. You have to, instead of paying taxes, you tithe to the church. The congregation has the priest who basically says, these are the rules and regulations for you living. And early on, even said how you're supposed to have sex, what you could do with your children, all of these different things. And so, like a government, it's basically there to control people.
So how active was the church part of growing up in your life in the military? Because you probably traveled a lot.
Well, yeah, we moved every 2 years from the time I was born until I was 18.
So you didn't really have a congregation or a parish.
No. Now, that's the other aspect when you talk about religion. But is it the religion that is it, or is it the parish and the community? And you have to look at the difference. Is there a difference between church, which is a community of people coming together, or is it the religion being told how to live?
Which is it? Which was it for you?
It was the latter. It was being told everything. I was convinced I was going to go to hell by the time I was 5 years old. I mean, even as a little girl, I did not understand a wrathful or vengeful God. That did not resonate with me whatsoever. You know, to me, God was a presence and that it benevolent, not malevolent, but he was there to be able to talk to when you needed somebody. I'm a firm believer in spirituality and believing in something that is greater than yourself. Because if you look around at the beauty of our earth, of everything, there's got to be something beyond just us. And so I've always believed that, just like I always believed I'd lived here before. And that wasn't taught in the Catholic Church. In fact, it was kind of dismissed a lot.
So you consider yourself then a faithful person?
I consider myself a person of faith and spirituality. I don't know what faithful person is. I have faith in people. I have faith in myself. But with reservations. You know, the Catholic Church for me was not something that was inclusive. You know, there was a hierarchy and a clique of, even when I was in a church temporarily when I was little, there was always those in the upper echelons of church. And I'm talking about congregations members based on how much they gave as opposed to others.
Are you uniquely singling out the Catholic Church because of your background and your experience with your family and its association with the church and having been baptized in the church? Or do you find that many of those same criticisms are applicable to the rest of Christianity?
I find them to be applicable to most of Christianity and most religions. You know, whether it be Buddhist, Jewish, Methodist, well, that's Christianity, but...
But they all seem to have similar problems?
I think they all do. I think once you start telling people how to live, you're going to run into those problems.
But isn't that their job?
Well, I don't know if that's their job of telling people how to live. I think their job is to talk to people about faith and... continuity of community, bringing people together, not separating people. See, to me, religion is almost like is almost tribal, and you see it. You saw it throughout the history of the Catholic Church because anything that wasn't Catholic was basically destroyed. I mean, there's been more killing in the name of the church than anything else.
Are you referring to things like the Crusades and the Inquisition?
Uh-huh, and the Troubles, quote-unquote, in Ireland.
Which was both Protestant and Catholic, but it certainly was exclusively Christian.
Right.
And that period of violence that took place over a long period of time, that always seemed to me to be that which is most difficult for me to understand, because it wasn't even used as an excuse, one government against another, one people from that country seeking to possess land. If they're the same people. They were all Irish, and the only difference that separated them, quite simply, was their religions. There was the Protestant Ireland and Catholic Ireland.
Yeah.
And that was the excuse for blowing people away.
Yeah, and both supposedly Christian. So where does Christianity come within that when you're saying, okay, you don't follow my Christianity, so therefore you're wrong? So that's basically tribalism. You know, we're seeing a lot of that today.
Tribalism began, though, with early man.
Well, sure.
And
because it was a way of keeping ourselves safe.
But did these problems that you're talking about right now, operating with fear, operating with power, did those problems also begin very, very early with humanity?
I imagine they did with humanity, not being an archaeologist or paleontologist or anything like that. I can't possibly say. I can say that the biggest problem that has happened within society is the becoming an agricultural society, which changed people in totally, because we went from having a small family to a large family because they were there to be able to help with the farming. And as we've done that, then it became into ownership. Religion didn't really start that much. I mean, it was around because you've had shamans since the beginning of time. But to put people into one a little box over here, a little box over there, a little box over there, you know, the Catholic Church has not been necessarily a friend to those in need.
What do you mean? I always have thought that people generally, even if they criticize Catholicism because of the mammoth size and the power and the wealth that exists, those areas of criticism I've heard, but I've never heard people criticize the Catholic Church for a lack of charity or compassion.
Well, the charity and compassion is not the church, it's the people within the church. You have the nuns that became Sisters of Mercy, that started the churches, that started the schools. They didn't get a whole lot from the Catholic Church to help them. They did it on their own, not with a lot of money. In fact, nuns still do not get very much help from the Catholic Church. And I don't want to sound like I'm being down on the Catholic Church. I think all churches have a purpose, not necessarily a benevolent purpose, but they all have a person. They're all a part of community. And I think the thing that is good about churches is that they bring together community. And you look at what just happened in Kentucky.
The tornadoes.
We had tornadoes, yes. Well, it tore up all the churches in the town just as much as it did the houses. And yet it brings things like that bring together people. And that's normally what a church is supposed to be for, to bring together that community to help rebuild. If you look at things like the Quakers, you look at the Shakers, the wonderful group in Pennsylvania,
Amish
and so forth, their community. But they're a very religious community, and you don't go beyond what their rules and regulations are because you'll be shunned and kicked out.
But isn't that true of religion?
Yes. How do you get kicked out of a religion?
that's an interesting question, particularly considering the fact that
I was kicked out of catechism class, and so I know that.
But there are rules in faiths that actually disallow your participation.
Right.
You can be kicked out of a church and made not welcome.
You can be ostracized. You can be you know, they have this whole thing, you know, with if you don't follow my rules, you don't get to belong here.
I don't think
that's what Jesus had in mind. In fact, I don't think Jesus had Christianity in mind.
Talk about that.
Well, Jesus was a Jew. Okay, he, as far as I can have read, he continued to be a Jew, will always be a Jew, and so forth. What he wanted to do was to reform what was going on in his society at that time.
To change Judaism.
To make it more inclusive. I mean, again, you had things going on which he thought were incorrect when it came to people and taking care of people, and again, communities and large groups.
So we're talking with Dr. Duffy McMahon, asking the question, is religion necessary? Now, you talked about the downsides, mm-hmm. and certainly on this program, you're free to add any that you might have forgotten. Is there anything in particular that you haven't said critically of organized religion in general that you want to say now?
Well, I have a problem with organized religion even today. We have a huge, huge grouping of homeless people. You know, in Phoenix, it gets to be 115 or hotter during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
During the winter, it can get as cold and it can snow, not a lot, but it can. They don't open their door to people. Their doors are locked during the day, so anybody that needs shelter, and theoretically that's what churches are supposed to be for, shelter, sheltering their congregation, sheltering people, helping people. If you look back at just even in history, look at the Great Depression in Ireland in particular during the potato famine. The church didn't do anything to help feed the people in need and encourage them to have more children. So you have to look at what's going on. What doesn't seem right with this picture? You have all these people starving to death. You have a church that's got lots of money that's not helping the poor, not helping the needy.
But you're talking, though, about an organization of more than a billion members worldwide.
Uh-huh.
But whether it's the Catholic Church again or Methodism or Baha'i, wherever you are in the world, that group of people involving worship and involving all of the other activities that are related to churches, mm-hmm. they have those rules. Well, isn't that kind of what a family is? A family has rules, and the members of that family are expected to abide by them, or?
Communities have rules. We have rules to live by, which is why we have laws and why we supposedly have the Ten Commandments, which are good, but not necessarily something people follow. I always talk about, I love the Ten Commandments because the first one is, thou shalt not kill unless.
So that's what excuses war.
Right, uh-huh. Yeah, the first thing it says, thou shalt not kill unless you don't agree with these people, and then you just go ahead and eliminate them because they don't agree with you.
So tell me about some of the positives, because obviously religion would not have existed over the centuries and the eons if there was not some contribution to the inherent behavior of mankind and the soul, you believe in the soul.
I believe in the soul. I believe in spirituality. I'm not anti-church. I think church has its place as a meeting for community, for people to gather together, and I think people need that. We're social people. So people think I'm anti-church or anti-religion. I'm not anti-religion, nor am I anti-church. I just find that there are aspects of it, for me, that don't work. For others, it works fine. It becomes a part of who they are. It's their family. They may not have a family, but they go to church and they have friends and so forth, and they come to meet. But do they necessarily allow anybody in that they don't know? That's the big question. And theoretically, with especially with Christianity, the way I was raised, you're supposed to embrace everybody. But it didn't say embrace everybody unless they're Jewish or unless they're Buddhist, unless they're, you know, black.
Heterosexual,
yeah. So, you know, the churches itself, when you're getting man-made rules, and that's what they are, they're not rules from God. They're man-made rules according to what they think that Jesus said, what they think, because we don't know. We don't have any positives that Jesus said this.
There are people right now who are jumping up and down wherever they're listening to this and saying, well, certainly we know. We know what Jesus said because we have the Bible.
Okay, the Bible was written about 300 years after Jesus died. It was a compilation of supposed gospels written by a multitude of bishops from around the area. And I mean, when I say around the area, we're talking about Italy, Spain, France, Germany, where they had bishops. But each one was written, you know, there were some written in Aramaic, there were some written in Latin, there's some written in Greeks. Well, translating anything is not going to necessarily be, let's say, authentic. So we've talked about the fact that there are different words that were used. You look at languages in particular. You have the Greek language. There's 12 different words that mean love.
In Greek.
How do you translate that if somebody says agape, which is basically a friendship type of love, and somebody translate that into something that they think it means and has no idea? The idea of breath and soul was always a combination. They didn't know whether the word meant breath, which was life, or soul, which is also life.
And so, as we have right now, our immediate audience that's listening to this in December, in the holiday season, it probably is appropriate that we mention the fact that even the word virgin, mm-hmm. which is an extraordinarily important part of the early life of mm-hmm. Jesus and what we celebrate now, and yet the translations that I've heard also include the fact that that word had nothing whatsoever to do with experience sexually, that it meant young girl.
Meant young girl, exactly. So again, you have eons, you have a couple of thousand years of translations which are translated by people, and people, regardless, when they're translated, are going to put things into their own mindset. So you have things like, even things like marriage. The Catholic Church early on thought it was best for a couple never to have sex because that would make their marriage more godlike. Well, who says?
Yet they encourage the increased population,
right? Mm-hmm.
And increased families to grow.
Yeah. But so look at the dichotomy of that. They talk about increasing the family size, yet say that the most sacred marriage is one where there is no type of sexual intercourse.
So what would the world look like, though, without religion? Can you imagine societies not having a faith in a higher power?
Oh, there's a difference between a faith in a higher power and religion.
Talk about that.
Okay. People will talk about spirituality. Spirituality is really having faith or belief in something greater than yourself. And religion just says this is the person and that's it. Well, we don't know what that is, okay? But you can be very spiritual. You can be very faithful. You can have a lot of faith and have a lot of beliefs in a lot of things without having to be a person of religion or be involved in a religion. And so the two are connected, but they're not.
So when you're talking, though, about organized religion themselves, the idea of the world's societies maintaining any kind of stability outside of a religious orientation seems unlikely to me, particularly because a quest for faith, religion, spirituality seems to be applicable on a universal basis.
Yes.
Would there not be just chaos if the entire planet had never come up with a basic rule of behavior formulated on the elements of spirituality that we exist?
I think that spirituality without religion is equally as spiritual, equally as fulfilling.
So you don't think religion then necessarily is something that every society needs at all?
I think
religion faith.
Religion is, to me, something that is brings people together. Okay, so
the Methodist Church down the block,
right?
The Baptists,
right?
And the temple.
But you have to look at how our society was run up until this last 50 years, in particular. We had a lot of rural communities. We had a lot of small gathering. You know, it wasn't until, I would say, the 1950s when our whole society started moving to the cities. And so you started losing your neighborhoods. You started losing your that. And so people, I think, went to something that was familiar with, that they could, you know, maybe find somebody else there, other people. And that's where I think religion can kind of come in. Now, religion as a place of to be able to go to worship, which is fine. I'm not one for having somebody. I think having somebody up to give me an information about growing up, what's good and what's bad, is fine. But I don't want somebody to tell me how to run my life. I don't want that in government, and I don't want that in religion.
But we all needed rules for the solution of math problems. We all needed rules for grammar and understanding language, science, very, very strict rules that continued to grow and be flexible. Mm-hmm. So why not human behavior?
There is a human behavior rule, and actually all religions have the same one. And it's not the Ten Commandments. It's the Golden Rule. And you start out by teaching your children, most parents, how to be good to other people. How you don't want to hit the kid next door because it's not nice. You wouldn't want him to do it to you. So the whole thing of do unto others as you do themselves started long before, quote-unquote, religion.
How do you define, since we've been talking about them separately, how do you define faith or spirituality versus religious membership, that is, being part of an organized religion?
It's so immersed together, it's really hard to separate them. That's one of the biggest problems that I have. I have faith, but let me tell you, the religions, quote unquote, whether it be Methodist, Catholic, Protestant, whatever, like I said, I had a hard time with having a God that was unforgiving and volatile.
So couldn't you then, could you then respond to a God that wasn't like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think finding a religion that has the views that you can live by, but again, most of it is do unto others as you would have them to do to yourself, do unto yourself. But faith is something each person has or doesn't have. they have a sense of a belief in more than there is today. There are those that I know that don't feel that there's anything beyond here, that you, when you die, you die. I don't believe that. I think religion gets in the way when it has the dogma of, okay, you have to wear a handkerchief on your head because you're a female. I mean, this is Catholic Church long ago. But, or you have to turn east and kneel down, and you have to pray five times a day.
So you don't think any of those things are important to the evolution of one's quality of life?
I feel that it helps people with their sense of community. That's about it. I don't think that there is a quote-unquote supreme being that says, if you don't pray five times a day, you're going to go to hell. Actually, I don't believe in a hell, but that's okay.
Here's one I don't think I've ever heard you talk about. Do you believe in general now that a society, you refer to the community, that a community, a society, a culture, can be civilized in the definition that most of us accept, civilized behavior, that a group, a culture, a country can be civilized without religion?
Yes.
Where do they learn the elements of civilization?
Well, you have to determine what is religion. If you look at the native Hawaiians, for years and years and years, they had their own belief systems and a belief in a higher power and so forth, and their rituals. And I think rituals are very important to people. I think it's great to have a ritual to say, okay, you've reached this milestone. But no, they believed in their gods, quote unquote gods. We talk about, you know, it's really interesting to me. We talk about the fact that there's only one God, and there shall not be any other gods than that. Okay, whether it be Judaism or Christianity, but we bring in other people. We just change their names. They're not gods. They're saints. Their avatars, their whatever they happen to be. So we pray to Saint Mary, we pray to, you know, Saint Francis, we pray to whatever, as opposed to praying to God. So what? How is that different?
Okay, but the saints now, the saints and those people that are used as examples of behavior, that's all they really are. They're people who either sacrificed a great deal in order that others might benefit. They have been teachers of children. All of those things that are to be admired. I don't know that they're worshipped.
Well, yeah. How come you have the feast day of saying such and such? How is that not a worship?
I'm asking you, are you saying that we should do away with saints?
I don't think we need to do away with anything. We have to be able to figure out that it's okay to belong to a religion as long as it does not prevent you from being outside of that religion. Okay?
Outside of that religion, to some, might mean that you are a criminal, that you are a consummate sinner that has a negative effect on this community that you were talking about.
Yeah, and then we have community law. We also have governmental laws that go along with that. If they are a criminal or whatever, then they are put away for whatever. Being ostracized from a community is really tough on a person. And like I said, religion has its place. Churches have their place. But they're originally supposed to be for neighborhoods and for groupings. As we have evolved, you know, up until the 21st century, religions and their purpose has changed. It used to be that you had the one church in a little town and that was it, and everybody went to it. But today, it's very difficult, unless you're in a small town, to be able to find that, to be able to have that sense of community. And that's the one thing that, to me, churches are good for and religions can be good for.
Let's talk about the troubles that religion itself, themselves, religions, are having. You've stated that you are not anti-religion, that you are not supportive of some elements of churches.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are religions in general, worldwide, really suffering for attendance and participation?
Well, I think mainly because as we evolve again, we move.
What do you mean?
Okay, I went to 6 different schools growing up. Okay, we moved every 2 years.
In the military.
In the military. So we don't have that sense of a community of the military, of being in a small town where everybody goes to the same church and worships together and does that. And what happens is that as that goes on, when the Puritans first came here, they found out that their children did not want to be as faithful as their parents were. So they just wanted to lighten it up a little bit. And I think over time, we keep on lightening it up enough that it's not going to be valid. But that's just called our next generation is going to be different than this one.
But you're saying that younger people are just simply less interested in church things, in church matters, in religion. It seems to me that there are fundamentals of spirituality that seem to just go along with humanity, mm-hmm. and that even if they're not taught, children somehow develop an interest in spiritual things, in that of the faith.
I think people do that as they get older to begin with, you know. They have the hierarchy of, I mean, just our developmental stages starting from, you know, being born up until we get older, how we change developmentally will change. As you get older, you become probably more spiritual or more involved in the church than you were as kids. You get your, you have your Sunday school or you have your catechism classes when you're younger to get a basic knowledge of hopefully what's good and what's right and what's wrong. And hopefully you can act on that. But that's something that should be beyond that.
Okay, but as you grow older and you either are more dependent on religion or you find it more attractive, is that why when you look at the congregations in virtually any service mm-hmm. that you see more gray hair than any other color?
Right. Well, they pretty much, I think that that's part of it. I just think that as we age, our sense of spirituality and religion changes.
But do you think that religions themselves are at fault for not attracting and keeping the interest of the younger generations?
Well, it's kind of, to me, that's one of the number one problems, is that they do not, you know, change with the times. We still have a Catholic Church that is misogynistic.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, it's all males. Their hierarchy is all males. The Pope is going to be male. They cannot have female priests. Yeah, that's not exactly going along with what goes on today.
How would that change the church?
One of the things that's interesting, we wouldn't have a church if it wasn't for women. Okay. Jesus taught to women and their kids. Mm. Okay, even you look at the letters of St. Paul's, they were to women because at that time, most of the women were the ones that raised the kids, got them involved in the church, and the husbands went along with it. Okay? But when you all of a sudden get rid of 50% of the population and they're no longer valid, that becomes a problem.
Yes, but are you talking about, though, the leadership, whether it's the parish priest or the bishop, you feel the Catholic Church would be more understanding of the needs of its parishioners if, as most Protestant churches now have, there was a clergy that was made up of men and women?
Oh, definitely. I don't know about how other people feel. There's no way that I could go to a priest to talk to him about marriage and family.
Because
he's never had one, he's never been married. Mm. Not that you have to be able to be empathetic, but the thing is there are certain aspects of life that he has no inclination of. And to me, that makes it tough. And he also has to go along with, again, how can you go to a priest if you think you're gay? How can you go if you think you have any other type of sexual dysphoria, if you want to call it that, if you think that you're trans or whatever? Can you go to a priest? No, I don't think so.
Well, yeah. They do study those areas.
Yeah, I can study them, and I have studied them because that's my field. But I'm just saying they do not know how to talk to them. And we still have
and a
people.
Woman would?
Probably more if a married family would understand.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And women in particular, women raise children, and even as young kids, you know, most women will start babysitting, most girls will start babysitting at an early age. So they know more about kids than most men. That's not to be any type of degradation to men. It's just that's the family unit from kids growing up is normally with their mother until a certain age, and then, you know, start doing more things on their own. But when it comes to religion and so forth, when you have anybody that is going to judge you, to me, that's a problem.
Hmm. And you feel that priests are, in essence, judgmental?
I don't think it's just priests. I think it's ministers. I think it's, you know, whoever is the hierarchy of the church and so forth. I think that they are always judging you. You know, God said to do this. Well, where did God say that? You know, he hasn't talked to me lately. Or, as I used to say when I was a little girl, I talk to him every day, so I don't need to go into this building.
Mm-hmm. How can, and right now there are ministers and priests and rabbis and leaders of every possible kind of congregation, because this is an international broadcast, how can they improve attendance? Let's talk about what the Chapel of the Holy Duffy would have that's different than most of the churches are now.
I don't know what would be different. You know, the whole setup and hierarchy of churches are, like I said, they are set up to have levels, which I don't always agree with. I think hierarchical levels.
Yes.
Yes. And so,
so the priest,
yeah,
the bishop, archbishop, and so on.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. See, to me, a priest or a minister or something should be more like a teacher. They're just there to help us learn right from wrong. But they're not, to me, they're not supposed to judge who you are or what that you do. That's
but
just,
aren't they teaching every Sunday in the pulpit? Aren't they teaching every day in their offices?
Is there a difference between teaching and preaching?
You must think so.
Oh, I definitely do. Teaching is to help you learn something. Preaching is literally lecturing that you have already done something wrong. And a lot of the thing with the preaching is they're telling you, you know, these are terrible, this is awful, you shouldn't do this, you know, whatever it happens to be. Like I said, even though I didn't go to church for a long time, but I went until I was about 7 years old, and I've gone off and on since then. But I rarely ever have seen any type of a service that does not have some sort of, I can't even say lessons, because they're not lessons. They're more of a lecture. So that's my, you know, they're not necessarily helping you figure out how to do something. They're telling you what's wrong with you.
But I still don't know that I'm clear on what it is that you would offer to the Baptist minister or the rabbi from the temple down the street, the synagogue. Mm-hmm. What you would offer to them as a suggestion, even if you were not a particularly religious person, but you were a marketing person. You were in the business of improving the desire for the product.
Right.
You have any thoughts on that? How to get more people into the pews and make it more attractive so they come back the next Sunday?
I would say get rid of preaching.
So do you do no sermons?
I said get rid of preaching. Like Zabik said, difference.
Okay, well, tell me the difference.
A sermon is just a way to teach. Okay, I'm going to give a sermon on whatever it happens to be in the Bible. Okay, that was 2,000 years ago. Why don't we bring it up to date?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we do a sermon on there was a terrible, terrible, terrible tornado, and what can we do to help others? This is a whole learning experience. What can we do to give to others who may not be a part of our community?
But don't you think that there are congregations now, since that happened just a matter of days ago, this coming Sunday, there will be, no doubt, priests, ministers, rabbis, all saying, please do what you can to help those people in the spirit of charity.
Right, right. But do what you can. But I don't see any of them organizing stuff. Okay? I don't see any of them saying, okay, our congregation, as the leader of this congregation, I want next week for everybody to bring in food, a toy, or whatever, because we're going to send it from our congregation because this is something we can do.
Well, I see that regularly with them also on a larger basis being a part of the Red Cross efforts and the food banks and United Way.
Okay, I don't see any of those having a religious title to them.
No. I'm talking about the individual neighborhood churches participating by sending those contributions through those larger organizations. It's just easier to do business that way.
Well, it could be, but they may have an association with them. But I don't see a lot of them having, okay, this is St. Timothy's food drive for such and such to help the people in Kentucky. I don't see that very often.
Perhaps because you don't go to church.
Yeah, but why does it have to be just secret? Or why just include that church? Why not saying, okay, St. Timothy's or whoever, you know, Our Lady of Cement, who whatever it happens to be.
So they don't, are you saying that they don't market their efforts
no.
to the community?
No.
They keep it within the structure
and they don't, they
of
don't,
that congregation.
I don't see them trying to bring people into their community.
What do you mean?
I don't, well, you know, I'm not big on proselytizing, but, you know, the Mormon church goes out and gets people to understand what the Mormon church is.
Through the missions.
Through the missions.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of churches doing that.
And even the Mormon church is highly criticized for going door to door in some countries.
Yeah. Going door to door and saying what that you have. I'm not one on proselytizing religions at all. And to me, it's just, okay to let people know where you are and what that you've got going. Let them decide for themselves.
Are you happy that you don't have that church obligation or that you don't have a church affiliation? Do you ever think about it as being something that pleases you rather than having that as a part of your life?
Well, I can't say that I'm happy about it. Let's just say it's not a concern of mine. It's not something I think about, you know, being a part of that community. We can all make our own communities. And so we all have our friends or places that we go to that we mill around, and there you have a number of them that don't have any. But no, I'm not something I've ever really thought about.
Tell me, though, about raising children in an atmosphere and environment that is holy, if not religious, if not even faithful. How do you introduce a child to the concept of God?
Well, I think the same way that most kids are introduced to them, just normally just by their parents reading. I don't know about you, but I had to, as a little kid, you know, go to bed and say our prayers. And I think that's part of it. I think part of it is the parents and part of it is the church.
Do you remember what you thought of God prior to any minister ever talking about striking you down with lightning if you commit a sin? Mm-hmm. But have you memories of your early thoughts about God as a result of your parental teaching?
My thoughts of God is that I talk to God all the time.
You know, but when you were a child.
When I was a child, yeah. I didn't understand having to be inside a building to talk to, or to have some guy talk to God for me. And that's the other thing, you know, the Catholic Church, why did I have to confess to some person that I didn't know? You know, 5 years old, you have your first communion, and you're supposed to go in and do your confession. Well, you know something? I had to lie in order to do my first confession. I think that's a little idiotic.
And a little early for the introduction of the concept of sin. However, going to confession is often thought of as in partnership with what you do professionally. It's a form of counseling, isn't it?
Yes and no. It's a form of counseling if you go in and you have supposedly done something that is really wrong and you want to do it. But it's not really a form of counseling whenever you say, okay, you're going to say to our fathers, three Hail Marys, and an act of contrition, and you're going to be fine. You're going to be absolved. I don't think so. You know, I don't think it's that easy. I think that you need to be able to have more involvement in what that you're doing to find out. You know, the priest just doesn't say, well, why did you do this? Well, what's going on? He doesn't counsel you. Every time I ever went to one, all I got was, okay, say two rosaries and act of contrition.
Here's a question with only a couple of minutes left that will test your memory.
Uh-oh.
What is the best experience that you ever had in a church or in association with a religious person or a religion itself?
I have two that I can think of. One is meeting Mother Teresa. And that had nothing to do with religion. It just had to do with her. The same thing with meeting the Dalai Lama. Is the type of person and the what that they exude in their sense of calmness, of peacefulness.
So these were two people, international as they are, mm-hmm. historic as mm-hmm. they are, but these were two people of great faith mm-hmm. who you were moved by.
Mm-hmm.
But well, what's the difference between those people and the parish priest?
I didn't see them every week, and they weren't telling me what to do. They didn't say, this is what you have to do. See, to me, going into a church and sitting down and praying, I think is absolutely wonderful. But whenever you have somebody up there and is telling you all the things you've done wrong, or what, you know, sinning, then you've lost me. Okay? If they're up there and they're teaching about right and wrong, if they are teaching about life in general, okay? Not just up there and saying, or my favorite thing is that anybody that's homosexual is bad, you know, sex is bad, all of these other things are good, bad, or indifferent. I don't want somebody to define that for me.
Do you know what you did that was really good today?
No.
Showed up here for the God Show. Our guest has been Dr. Duffy McMahon.